Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Women of Washington is a series of weekly radio interviews with Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives, role models for the next generation of Washington leaders. Every Wednesday morning at 9, Aileen and Gigi interview the most accomplished women in Washington who share their life lessons and secrets to success.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today in the studio, we have Tina Dolph, President, Information and Technical Solutions at ASRC Federal. Tina has over 20 years' experience in the government services industry in areas of operational leadership, market expansion, mergers, acquisitions, and business strategy. Dolph holds a bachelor's degree in business administration from Lemoyne College and an MBA from Rensselaer Polytech Institute.
I'm so happy to join you this morning. Thank you.
You know, women are really still the minority in leadership positions in the government and the federal IT sector. And you've been in the industry for over 20 years in very male-dominated organizations. So what led you into this industry?
Well, actually, it's kind of an interesting story. I almost got here accidentally. My father spent all of his career really serving the Navy as a civilian. So I was a little familiar with defense contracting, but as I got out of Lemoyne College, my degree was in marketing, and my plan was to be this great marketeer in New York or LA. But what happened is it was the early 90s. The job market was pretty tough, so I ended up actually getting two job offers, one from Ogilvy & Mather down in New York City, which I was very excited about, but real tight salary, and I had no family or friends down there, so it just wasn't an affordable option. I also had an offer from General Electric Aerospace because I had interned for them. They were right near my college in Lemoyne. So I'd interned for them in their finance department, and they offered me an opportunity in their training program. And I honestly thought, well, I'll give it a shot because I needed a job, and it was a good company. But what then happened was I got there and I loved it. So even though I intended only to stay until I could find something in my field of study, I really enjoyed the defense industry and joining a firm that really served the American public and also helped keep us safe each and every day.
And so did you ever get back to your marketing roots?
No, I never did. I have been in this industry. I started as a finance analyst in a contracts department, and 20 some odd years later, here I sit still in this marketplace, and I've never left it. I've moved around a lot in different capacities in the organizations I've worked for, but I've never left the market, and I really don't intend to because I really enjoy what I do.
The federal IT sector is still very male-dominated. Have you seen lots of changes over the last 20 years? Are there any that in particular that stand out to you?
So what I've seen over my time period is when I first started, there were many times I was the only female in the room. I have some stories where, as many of us do, you know, where people thought I was there to get the coffee or take the notes or what have you. Now I look around and I look around like the boardroom we have at ASRC Federal. There's 12 of us on the senior leadership team. 5 of us are female. And that's a huge step forward, I think, because, again, not so much because of the race or the gender, but just the diversity of thought that we get in that organization and the conversations that we have are so different. So I'm really happy to see that it's happening. And it takes time. I mean, you think, you know, you build leaders over time. So I think over 20 years, you see more diverse faces around boardrooms now because there's been, you know, good, hard people working at making sure diverse opportunities were given to individuals, and I really think companies benefit from that today.
Tina, as you mentioned before, you are the president of ASRC Federal. I believe it's Alaskan Native Corporation. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and a little bit about ASRC Federal and what you do?
I joined ASRC Federal actually a few months ago now, almost 7 months ago. And really what attracted me to ASRC Federal, a large part, was its Alaskan heritage. I'm sure we'll talk about later, networking and so forth, as I found out about this company, the first thing that attracted me to it was its superior business performance. If I looked over the last, 3 to 4 years, they had double-digit top-line growth, double-digit bottom-line growth. Their business development track record was amazing. So, and as we all know, this is a hard time for federal marketplace, especially in some of the areas that ASRC Federal specializes in. So that's what attracted me. But then once you get in and you understand the Alaskan Native story and how this company is built on the values of the Nupiat people, it's such an easy decision to join. It is, you know, our shareholders are living in the northernmost point of Alaska, right in a town called Barrow. And we support all of our shareholders through the dividends of our company. And the real purpose is to make sure that their culture can continue and move forward and not get lost over time, as it almost dangerously did when the land was settled by the United States years ago. You know, these are good people, and you can wake up every day and feel like you're making a difference. And one thing that's always kind of guided me in my career is when I look in the mirror in the morning, I want to make sure that I'm, you know, I left my children every day, I leave my husband every day. I want to make sure I do something that makes a difference. And in this company, you feel that each and every day.
So Alaskan Native Corporation, for our listeners out there, what does that mean to people around the Beltway doing business with the federal government?
Sure. Alaskan Native Corporations, back in the early 70s, there was legislation put in place that enabled Alaskan Native Corporations to get a fair shake at the table for participating in the organizations. Because back in the 1970s, you know, these companies were small. So we do have some preferential treatment around 8A subcontracting, which allows us to get into market space and provide for this disadvantaged group of people that own the company. So we behave just like any other real disadvantaged, you know, women-owned, minority, veteran-owned organization, and we're able to then, you know, get into market spaces that without that, you know, initial foot in the door as an 8A, we may not have gotten in other ways.
Tina, you mentioned, you know, this is a tough time to do business in the federal government with the shrinking budgets and growing challenges. So what has it been like for your first year at helm of a corporation like this?
What was nice about joining here is when I got here, it's a very strong performing organization. And, you know, as you go through your career, you have all sorts of different opportunities. And sometimes you're asked to take an organization and fix it, or you're asked to integrate. So you spend a lot of time internally focused, working on improving metrics and improving performance. Where here, I got a really great team. I've got a very seasoned group of professionals. They've got good performance. So I've really gotten to focus on growth and extending the marketplace. So what's been interesting about it is really spending a lot of energy focused on my client set, focused on growing and helping the business become bigger than it is today, not with a lot of fix it inside. So I've really enjoyed the opportunity and finally just feel like I'm starting to get my feet under me as we start to exploit those new marketplaces.
Previously, you were COO of PAE, which had been a division of Lockheed Martin. So how is your current role different from that last role that you had?
What's interesting about when you have a COO title, it can mean almost anything, right? Because what that role typically is defined by the CEO of the company and whatever he or she feels is the right opportunity. So what PAE had done was the COO operation, when I had it, really was to help PAE exit from the Lockheed Martin corporate infrastructure into being its own standalone company. So a lot of my energy was focused internally. So think about things like setting up financial systems, making sure that the company, the individual operating groups of the company worked well together and we weren't kind of stepping on each other's toes, you know, operating without a corporate infrastructure above you, because PAE, when it was sold, went into the equity world. So things that you naturally get from a large corporation, we didn't get any longer. We had to figure that out. So my role was really more internally focused. Big part of the job was integration. During that time there, we bought a couple companies. So a lot of my role was bringing those people into the organization and making sure that we got the efficiencies we expected in the business case. So if you compare that to what I'm doing today, to this job's much more outward focused, right? I have responsibilities internally. I have to make sure it runs properly. I have to make sure that we deliver on our commitments. But I get to spend a lot more of my time on strategic initiatives, working with clients. You know, what do they need? As you go through a tough marketplace, you know, what I have found over my time is really what's really important is to listen to your clients, because their needs change over time. And, you know, you say something like, oh, well, we sell IT. You know, we can poll 10 people and we're all going to get very different definitions of what that is, right? So the only way you can really figure it out is to spend time with your clients and understand what they need, which has been a real fun part of this new role and a little bit different than what I did in the past.
How do you think you will change the strategic direction for ASRC Federal?
Yeah, one of the things, you know, we've been debating actually internally is what is the best way to go to the market. And when you hear or talk to the clients, what you hear is, you know, they're shrinking budgets. We need efficiency. And if you think about the IT platforms, they're changing, right? I mean, you don't have to explain it too difficultly, right? You've got social media, you've got the cloud, you've got all these things that are, and the government is kind of struggling and wrestling with how do I take advantage of that? They've obviously got security concerns. So what we have been talking about internally is really focusing our strategy on capabilities. And what are those capabilities that the clients need, whether it's high performance computing or data analytics? You know, how do we structure ourselves internally to provide that level of capability across all of our business organizations, and then organize ourselves to, you know, increase customer relationships, which is a little different than how we've done it in the past. Before, it was more about, you know, really focused on, you know, just what that customer wants, where now they're asking for us to help figure out the capabilities and how to aid them in their mission. So we're talking about that internally. It's still a little, I would say it's in the infancy stage of conversation, but we think that makes some sense as we move forward.
So it sounds like the idea would be that you would get involved with potential customers earlier in their decision cycle to help them figure out the different approaches and maybe what will be the best solution to their problem, as opposed to just being able to deliver the solution to their problem.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like, we've got a couple of clients right now where we're doing, you kind of get into the client because they need a certain thing done. You know, the one that comes to mind right now is we're moving a data center for a client. And the contract we have right now is simply to move the data center. But as we've been talking to them, they're starting to say, well, hey, when we get the data center moved, then what's the best platform for that? You know, and you start having those conversations over coffee, right? About how, you know, should we consider the cloud-based brokerage? Should we, you know, keep hardware? You know, what should we do and how should we house it? So what we're hoping is, it's nothing formal just yet, but we're having that conversation. So as they start to coalesce around what they want to do in the future, we'll be there to help them. And hopefully we can help influence them, because we've got a lot of knowledge just from being in the industry that they may not have. So hopefully we can help them, you know, from going through some false starts and getting, you know, bad data. We can kind of help them and make that process a little more efficient.
Today, we're speaking with Tina Dolph, President, Information and Technical Solutions at ASRC Federal. Coming up, we'll hear about Tina's early years. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Tina Dolph, President, Information and Technical Solutions at ASRC Federal.
So, Tina, we just jumped right in to talk about your current role and your past role. Let's back that up a little bit to find out about how you got to where you are. So where did you grow up?
Yeah, I actually grew up in a small town called Latham, New York, which is about 20-30 minutes outside of Albany, the capital of the state. Kind of a small, you know, middle-class town. My mom and dad still live there. My extended family is originally from Philadelphia. And like I mentioned earlier, my father took a job at the Knowles Atomic Power Lab up in Schenectady, New York, which is what took us there. And they're still there, living in the same house that we moved into when I was two. So nice long history there in a great town to grow up in.
And when you were growing up, you went to Lemoyne. Mm-hmm. Well, what was your biggest influence helping you to decide what you wanted to be and where you wanted to go?
Yeah, I think when I look back at it too, you know, I was very lucky to grow up with a really supportive family. You know, my mom and dad, you know, we were very supportive of all three of us. I'm one of three children. And, you know, my dad was always very involved in our lives and what we did. And I can remember, you know, as a child, not always appreciating it, but, you know, hours at the kitchen table with homework. And it was always drilled into us very early that homework was important. You always did your best and failing really wasn't an option, right? I always used to joke that you brought home a 98. He wanted to know where the other 2 points were. So I think that really set a nice groundwork for me. I understood what, you know, hard work looked like. And I understood that, you know, that's just what you did. And you were expected to succeed. And but I had help. So it was never that they said, oh, well, you know, good luck, you got to get your homework done. They were right there with me, helping me at the kitchen table with the homework, with whatever, you know, sporting events we were at. You know, we all went as a family. So if my sister had a gymnastics, you know, meet, we went. My brother had a soccer game, we all went. So I think that support, it teaches you a couple of things, right? It teaches you responsibility, and it teaches you the importance of having a team around you. Right? Because I look back at it, and now as a parent myself, you realize you can't do it by yourself and what an advantage those of us who didn't have to do it by ourselves have over, you know, people who maybe didn't have that supportive background. So I really give a lot of credit to my parents. And actually, another story is when I got to Lemoyne almost by accident too, because when I went out to Syracuse to look at schools, I was going to look at Syracuse University, and I went to a really small high school. Like, there was 200 of us in my class, or 300. And I got out to Syracuse University, and, you know, my freshman lit class would have been bigger than my entire school. And I just wasn't ready for that. And my parents had been kind of like, all right, we'll take you to Syracuse, but maybe we should think about other schools. And my dad did some research, I think, and found Lemoyne, you know, and it was a great experience, you know, great school, perfect for me. I still had the big college town, but I had a small, intimate university, which is what I was really needed and didn't even realize I needed it so much until my parents helped pick that out for me.
So you mentioned your dad a couple of times and at being kind of a formative figure. And you also mentioned that he had a lifelong career at GE, and that was your first job. So mm-hmm. Did that influence you? Did his working at GE influence you?
Well, actually, it did a bit, because I think I mentioned earlier, you know, my plan wasn't to get into finance, accounting, or the federal space. I was off to marketing. And when I got that second job offer, you know, my dad was very encouraging, because he's like, this is a really good company. And he's like, you'll enjoy it and you'll get challenged and so forth. So, and interestingly enough, I can remember during my interview process, one of the questions that the interviewer asked me was, you know, what do you think about the defense industry? What, you know, because at the time, you know, there's a lot of consolidations going on. If you think back to the early 90s, you know, there was always the stories about, you know, contractors, you know, taking the government for too much money and so forth. So they got asked, I got asked the question, you know, do you feel you can succeed in this industry and support it? And I kind of looked at him funny. I was like, what do you, of course, like, what do you mean? And I actually didn't get what he was asking me. And I think that's large part to, you know, it was just part of how I grew up. Like, I, you know, a lot of what my dad did was not work he could talk about, but I knew it was important. And I knew that it was important to our sailors. And I knew it was, so it was just kind of who I was and how I was wired a little bit, which I didn't really realize until he asked me that question. So yes, I definitely think that, you know, the fact that my dad was in that company helped me make the decision to get into the industry.
Many of our guests say things don't necessarily turn out like you planned. They actually turn out better. Mm-hmm. And in today's market, especially for our listeners out there, you already mentioned it's kind of tough with reduced budgets and increased missions. And doing business with the federal government is more of an opportunity, more of a challenge to help serve every day. So applying that same kind of principle you just talked about, do you have any advice for a listener out there that may be facing some of the same challenges you did earlier on in your career? Is there networking? Is there a way for them to help do this? Because fortunately, you were in a large company that offered those mm-hmm. kinds of opportunities along the way.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, the first thing I would say to somebody is, regardless of what's happening around you, like, be resilient, right? And, you know, things always, especially when things are changing, and if you perceive them not for the good, you know, it's hard to get through that. And it's very easy to get, you know, emotionally upset about it. And you have to go through that as part of it. But you have to really be resilient and realize that, you know, sometimes as corny as this may sound, when a door closes, a window opens, right? And those kind of sayings are important, and we reference them because it's ultimately true. It's very true. And as I think back over my career, there's been a lot of times where, you know, you're sitting at your desk and you can feel the tears because whatever just happened is not what was in your plan, right? Whether it was personal or you lost a contract or what have you. And I think how you respond to those and react to that is, and how your team sees you react to that is really important. And when those things happen, to your point, Aileen, the network you have around you is incredibly important, because it might be that you need people to help you find a job, right? It might be that you need people to help you solve a technical problem because you just got a cure notice from a client. You know, it might be you need someone to pick up your daughter from dance class because the proposal is not done and you have to stay. So that whole idea of a network of people, you know, a team, really extends throughout. I think, you know, I think if you, to be successful without that, I wouldn't even know how. You have to have that group of people around you, and you have to be that for other people as well, realizing that there are times when your employees are going to have issues where they need to run out, right? And they need to go take care of a sick pet or a daycare or whatever it is, and be supportive of each other. And like, I've got your back now. You go take care of your issue. Next Tuesday night when my son's got a soccer game, can you do it for me? And that's how you get through those things. And just really think, you know, help me, you know, having that whole, it takes a village, not to get too corny with all my sayings, but you know, it really, that has been very important to me being able to do what I do.
So Tina, I want to go back to the fact that you had this marketing degree, and even more than that, you had this dream that you were going to end up on Madison Avenue working for an Ogilvy and Mather or the like. So many of, I think, younger women and younger men, younger people today, millennials, they feel like it's really important to follow their passion.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hear you and hear your story, what I'm struck by is you didn't follow your passion. You went into a practical job.
Mm-hmm.
That paid a little bit more and didn't have you living in a really expensive city. And I can tell you have found passion around that.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk a little bit about that and maybe, you know, give some advice to younger listeners who might be thinking it's they, you know, they absolutely have to get a job following their passion?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, and it's kind of, you know, I would never propose to be an expert on this, but I think as I think about it, especially as I've gotten older, you know, what you're passionate about in my mind isn't necessarily a thing. Like, it's not about wanting to be fashion. It's not about, for me, it's about, you know, as I've gotten older, I've really come to think about it. It's for me, it's like making a difference in what I do. Right. So the what you have to think about is, can you make a difference where you're at? Because think about it, there are times when life just does not go the way you think it's gonna, right? And there are times when you have to make the best of what you're dealt. And we all have those stories, right? So as I've been in those situations, I keep thinking, all right, and actually as I joined ASRC Federal, I think I mentioned this earlier, a big part of my decision was, all right, Tina, remember, you're motivated or your passion is making a difference, right? So does this job offer you that opportunity? And it could be a job in defense contracting. It could be, you know, a job, you know, volunteering at an animal shelter, like whatever your thing is. But if you can make a difference doing it, for me, that's satisfying. So I would just, you know, recommend to, you know, I've said this to my kids. I recommend, you know, just think about what it is that drives you and realize there's many different ways to get there. And the other the piece of advice I gave you is nothing's really forever. Like, you know, you make a decision and you make a point and then you move on, right? And then, you know, 6 months, a year, whatever, something else happens and your world changes again. So, you know, just because you can't do that exact what you believe your passion job is today doesn't mean that you can't find that passion in a different venue. You may just not recognize it yet.
Today in the studio, we're speaking with Tina Dolph, President, Information and Technical Solutions at ASRC Federal. Coming up, we'll ask Tina about women in the executive ranks. You are listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Tina Dolph, President, Information and Technical Solutions at ASRC Federal. Tina, women currently hold only 16% of corporate board seats in the U.S. and 14% of executive officer positions. Just 23 of the Fortune 500 CEOs are females. And aerospace, frankly, and defense and IT contracting, the numbers are even lower than that. So you have really shattered the glass ceiling. What, you know, do you believe that women have finally broken into the old boys club? And then as a follow-up to that, what strategies have you used to deal with situations where you feel like you might not have been treated equitably?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've always struggled a little bit with the glass ceiling, you know, metaphor, because I think a lot of it is, you know, back to, we talked a little bit about diversity and how I grew up in an environment where that was, you know, recognized. And, you know, as you look at leaders, it takes time to develop those leaders, right? Just because we decide today we want a diverse set in the boardroom, that takes time because you need people with the right skill sets and experiences. And, you know, as I kind of mentor people around me, I've got a couple that are coming to mind that are like, I want to be a program manager, or I want to be you. I was like, all right, well, here's the kinds of things you have to do. And sometimes it means taking lateral moves to get a skill set. So I always think about, I've always thought about my resume. Not that I was ever really looking for a job, but I always think, okay, if they fire me tomorrow, what does my resume look like? And where are the holes? So as I made decisions about what kinds of opportunities to take, there were some I took that in my gut, I was like, oh, I don't really want to do this. But I knew I needed to get that experience so I could understand that part of the business. So I think, you know, I think we're shattering or getting people who've gotten through the glass ceiling are people who have had the right experiences and learned how to operate in the whatever industry you happen to be in. So I think, you know, as you think about broadening your toolbox or looking at your skill set, that's been really important to me. I also happen, you know, there's always an element of luck, I think, in some of this. And I was very lucky to be part of organizations that were very open to that. I had a lot of good mentors who, and good female mentors. I think another thing you hear sometimes is that, you know, women don't like to help women. I can honestly say I haven't had that experience. I mean, I've had some really strong women, you know, Linda Gooden, Marilyn Houston. I mean, people who made it a point to mentor and teach and help in those days when you think you can't do it. I can remember there was a story once when I was faced with a job choice and I really thought the company wanted me to take, you know, job A, and I really kind of wanted job B, but I understood the politics and wanted to make sure that by taking what I wanted wasn't gonna, so I was agonizing over the decision. I finally went and talked to one of my mentors, and, you know, she said to me, she said, you know, they need a good person both jobs. You pick the one that's good for you and your family, and we'll support you in that. You know, so I think, again, I had that kind of support network around me that allowed me to move up in an area that, so I can't ever really say I gave a whole lot of thought about the boys club or glass ceilings because I was really kind of too busy figuring out how to get to that next opportunity. And I was in an environment that allowed me to do that. So, you know, I do consider myself lucky. And I think a lot of women, when you talk to people, you know, my peer set, you know, you'll hear a lot of similar things. And maybe it's because of my age. I mean, I think there's a lot of, you know, pioneer-like women who went before me that helped to kind of open those doors for me. So when I walk through, maybe the door, I had to push it. I didn't have to, you know, ram it myself because it was already kind of cracked for me.
So it sounds like you're one of the very lucky ones that I'm not hearing you say that you actually faced a situation where you felt like you were disadvantaged because you were a female. But were there still times when you looked at the leadership of the company or your division or your group at the time and saw that it was all male and thought about, okay, are they ever going to let me in?
I think women and men tend to lead differently, right? And I went through a while in my career where I was almost afraid to ever think about sitting in a chair like I sit in today because I looked at the behaviors of how those leadership work. I'm like, I'm just not wired that way. Like, I'm not going to be able to do that. And then what I kind of realized was you can't lead any way but who you are or what you are familiar with or what you're comfortable with, right? So I had in my head that attributed to a male-female difference. And until I could wrap my head around that, it's a people difference and we have to do things the way we want to do them and be true to ourselves, I would let myself believe that I could get to that next step. Because, like, I don't have to do it their way. I can do it my way. So the other piece of that, I think, is once I made that click in my head, I also then realized, like, I need to network with those people. Like, I had a very strong female network, but then I was like, I really need to spend the time and the energy to get out and talk to people and understand how they think and what they do. And I think one of the most powerful questions you can ask is actually, what do you think? So, you know, networking and making sure with the my male counterparts was really eye-opening to me because it was easy for me to kind of think, oh, they don't really want me in the team. Because diversity was something that was pushed, there was times in my career that I did fight you got this job because you're female. And, you know, and that would infuriate me, you know, and I had a very strong male counterpoint. And he's like, only thing you can do is prove him wrong. He's like, don't let it get in your head. It's like, they're going to think what they're going to think. But the best way you can get them to stop saying that is to perform and do well.
So, Tina, let's double click on that. You talked about two very important subjects. So I'm going to bring them together. One is leadership and one is that network and that team around you and helping leverage them and helping them engaged in helping solve the problem or the mission in front of you. So how would you describe your leadership style?
I think I hope what people would say is it's very inclusive. You know, one of the things I like to tell my staff, and I learned this early on too, is, you know, as the leader of the organization, like, I hold the title, right? So that means I hold the responsibility and I need to make sure that we hit our commitments and so forth. But any given day of a week, I might not be the leader that day. And this gets back to the whole idea of I can't be an expert in everything I do. And actually, the current role I have right now is a very good example. You know, I've got a lot of strong technologists on my team that sometimes even when they're talking, I'm like, what are you saying? You know, because it's such a different technical background than mine. So if we're solving a technical issue, if we have a customer that's screaming about something, I'm not the leader that day. Right? One of my technologists is there that day, and we are there to support him or her as they figure out what we need to do. So, and that takes some work. And there's criticism that comes with that, because one of the criticisms of my style, I think, would be that, you know, building consensus and getting people on board takes time. And I definitely understand there's always a time where you have to say, okay, I've heard everybody and this is the decision. But what I try to end every meeting with was, okay, we've had a, especially after the spirited ones, you know, where we definitely have disagreement on the team, I will look around at everybody in the room and say, can you support the decision we just made? You don't have to love it. It didn't have to be yours. But when we walk out that door, we all have to be in support. Can you support it? If somebody says no, we talk about it some more. And if that means it takes me an extra couple days to make that decision, unless it's, you know, obviously a fire, you know, that we're fighting, you know, we'll do that. And to me, that's important, because the only way I think an organization moves forward together is if everybody feels like they've been heard and they're part of that decision-making process. And it served me really well, because I've been, as you mentioned earlier, Aileen, I've had a variety of different roles. You know, I've been in companies where I managed workforces of thousands of people around the country. Like, you know, PAE is a global-based. My footprint was Afghanistan, Iraq, New Zealand, Australia, Africa. You know, so there's no way you're going to be an expert on that. And my job was to make sure that all of those people, you know, felt like they were included in the team and we could move forward. I don't know how else to do that, but, you know, including people and talking to them and building consensus. So I hope that's what people would say, because that's what I try every day to do. And I really think it's helped the organizations I've been in, because you get the ideas from everybody and not just from Tina.
That's great points for leadership just in general. But in roles of leading a federal contracting shop, you have worldwide responsibility. But at the end of the day, it's the culture around the Beltway that kind of makes a difference. Is there a different elements of leadership that is required, especially in today's very dynamic and changing and kind of tough environment around in the federal sector, that you believe is really required to help lead a company to success?
Well, yeah, I think you have to understand, I mean, you're right, the Beltway or the defense market is different, right? You have to, it gets back to understanding your client and their organization and their culture, right? Because we often joke, you know, obviously there's a lot of back and forth, right? There's civilians who go into government, you know, people who come in to civilian organizations. And I think you have to understand and respect that. You know, I can think of stories when you've hired people out of the government and they've come in and these are really, you know, decorated, talented people with, you know, stars and stripes on their uniforms. And they'll say things like, oh, you know, I'm not really sure. I'm not going to be any good at this. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, do you understand what you just did? And I kind of use the story as like, you know, just like you wouldn't put Tina Dolph in front of a platoon in Afghanistan, right? Because what would I do? I'm not going to leave you hanging here. I'm going to teach you what you need to know about business. I need you to teach me what I need to know about the client set, because I've never been in the military. My family hasn't been in the military. I haven't even been in the civilian agency. So I need help understanding that culture, because it does work. And depending on what branch you're dealing with, it's very different. You know, the Department of Defense has its own kind of rank file, how decisions get made. I spent a time where I support Department of State, very different organization, both, you know, very good, strong organizations, but they operate differently. You know, so I tried to bring my DOD knowledge into Department of State and it wasn't working. And finally, one of my state people sat me down like, let me explain to you, you know, how it's different and what you're doing isn't, why it's not working. So I think you have to really understand that culture here in you know, DC and even in other, you know, areas where you're on bases and so forth. Because if you don't, and it's just hard to get that trust of the client set. And without that, you're really done.
Today in the studio, we're speaking with Tina Dolph, President, Information and Technical Solutions at ASRC Federal. Coming up, we'll ask Tina about how she balances it all. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Tina Dolph, President, Information Technical Solutions at ASRC Federal.
Tina, we are going to talk about your life outside ASRC Federal, but I do just want to go back to one thing that you were talking about in the last segment. You talked about the importance of networking and making sure that you had that supportive network who could be there to help you in a myriad of different ways. So was there a particular time in your life that you put yourself out there and you found your network really came through for you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, networking is so important. And I think, you know, I always joke that, you know, when I retire, I'd like to go back into a university and teach and have, you know, one of my classes would be networking 101 for women, because it took me a while to catch on how important that is. You know, and we're so busy, right? You know, at the end of the day, you know, going to, you know, grab a cocktail or a glass of wine or go play golf or what have you, finding time is hard, but it is so, so important. And, you know, actually, I wouldn't really be at ASRC Federal without my network. And again, it was almost an accident. You know, I had gone to the Professional Services Council annual convention that they have, and I was there with a colleague of mine, and we're at a break, and my colleague introduces me to a woman named Bridget Medeiros, and there was a connection there because Bridget and I had both worked for the same company previously, but we didn't know each other. So the colleague makes the introduction and then flits off, and Bridget and I start talking, and we had similar backgrounds and we were sharing what's going on and da da da. So she asks me, hey, what are you doing? And I was at a point at PAE where I had just finished up the integration of my last company, or the last company that we had bought. I was like, yeah, I'm trying to figure out what I want to do next. And she's like, well, what do you think you want to do? And I was like, oh, I really want to get back into operations. And she says, oh, well, we just had a resignation. She's like, would you like me to introduce you? And I said, well, sure. And then, you know, fast forward 6 months later, I'm getting an offer for this job, which I had wasn't even on my radar prior to going to that conference. And what's even more interesting about it is I don't network easily. Like, I love to talk to people, but to walk into a room where I don't know anybody, I gotta talk myself in my head to do that, right? I've got to convince myself to do this. And that conference, I almost didn't go to, because that afternoon, we had to leave on a Sunday afternoon, and I was missing a soccer game that my son was playing in, and I'm whining to my husband about, I don't really want to go. And he's like, no, go, it'll be fine. Da, 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 da. And if I had not gone, I wouldn't have the job I have today. So, you know, you really, it's really, really important to make time to do that. And I think importantly to do it for other people, because it's kind of a give and take. If you're not, you know, I feel a very strong responsibility to help other people around me, because people have done that for me. And I know I wouldn't be where I am without that help. So I want to make sure that I pay that backwards to the people behind me to make sure I can help them have that same experience.
Today in the studio, we're speaking with Tina Dolph, President, Information and Technical Solutions at ASRC Federal. Tina, I think you had a great point that a lot of women out there kind of don't take times for themselves. So let me ask you, what do you do when you're not working?
Yeah. Well, I have quite a few things that I like to do. Right now, I am the lucky mother of two teenagers. I have a 13-year-old daughter and a 17-year-old son who are amazing kids and very involved in things. So my daughter is a competitive dancer. My son is an amazing singer and also is a really strong soccer player. So I spend a lot of my time at dance recitals and volunteering for those organizations to make sure that the schools and the dance studios and so forth get the support they need from the parents. And I really enjoy it, because there's nothing more rewarding to me than watch your kids do something they love and help be part of that. So I spend a lot of time. That takes up probably most of my weekends right now. When we do have time besides that, I love to run and to work out. I think a big important part of anybody, women specifically too, is to make sure you take time to take care of yourself, because otherwise you get tired and run down and all that stuff. So, you know, there's nothing more mind clearing for me than a quick run or spin class. Like, I love spin class. If y'all haven't tried that, very good. And then, you know, one of my passions are so forth is animals. And I love, I just think they're innocent souls. So my family and I do volunteer at the Middleburg Humane Foundation when we can. I don't get there as often as I'd like, but we do spend energy as a family doing that together, because I think it's important for the kids to give back to the community that we live in too. So, you know, I'm probably not that different than most women. When I do have downtime, I try to spend as much of it as I can with my family.
If you were to go back and see yourself as you were leaving college and getting your first job, or maybe even one of your kids when they're about to graduate from college, what three pieces of advice would you give them to help them find that happiness and that success?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I mean, just three. I could think of so many, like carry an umbrella and wear good lipstick. But I think the first one, as I think about it, is really keep an open mind. There's been so many times in my career when people have brought me ideas or career opportunities when in my head, my first thought was, well, that's never going to work. You know, and I've had people around me who have, you know, my husband being one, mentors being others that I've talked to, and they push me in directions. And without that push, I wouldn't be where I was today. And if I had had more of an open mind, maybe I wouldn't have needed that push. And he also, you know, open minds as people bring you ideas in your day-to-day work. You know, sometimes a crazy idea is exactly what your company needs to move forward. So I think keeping an open mind is one I would say. We've talked a lot about networking this morning. I think that would be my second one, is take time to network. And when I say network, what I mean is, you know, take care of the people around you and let them take care of you sometimes. You know, it's kind of, it's a team. If you think about just life in general, whether it's work or your family or whatever, you need that network of people to help you get through the day. And there's, because no one can do it all. They always say, oh, you know, women who are doing it all. You're never. Sometimes you're doing it all and sometimes you're not. And you have to have people help you. And that probably gets me to my last one, which is, you know, really, I don't know how else to sum it, but, you know, be present. Wherever you're going to be, be there. And this is hard. I think this is hard for many people. I know it's hard for me. You know, if you're going to be at your kid's soccer game, be there. You know, don't be on the phone. Don't be checking your email. Be there. If you're at work, you know, be there. And don't beat yourself up because you're missing something else. Because wherever you're going to be, you have to be committed at that moment. And that's how, if you have any shot at doing everything, I think that's how you do it, is to just give yourself to whatever you're working on at that moment in time. And give yourself a break. Like, you don't have to, don't beat yourself up if you can't be everywhere at the same time, because nobody can be, and that's quite all right. So just, you know, be present and be where you need to be, and focus on that. And I think, you know, I think the best shot you got at trying to get as much done as you can, because nobody can do it all. It's just not possible.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Tina Dolph, President, Information and Technical Solutions at ASRC Federal. Tina, I want to thank you so much for sharing your background and your journey with us. You can learn more about Tina and ASRC Federal at their website, which is asrcfederal.com, or you can also find them on their new Facebook page, which is ASRC Federal. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday mornings at 9 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.